Hello, everyone. We welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion on this beautiful May day. Our subject today is everlasting punishment, better known as everlasting love, and we welcome you all. We're recording today from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent in Plainfield, New Jersey, the United States of America. Thanks for joining us. And we'll begin with our morning prayer.
I'm reading today from Addenda of Collectania, page 14. There's something there. If the heart stays young, old age can never become anything but ennobled thereby. Years do not make one grow old if one grows in grace. Decay does not belong to matter so much as to mind. We do not lose our faculties through matter so much as through mind, do we? Now my thought is, if we kept our mind fixed on God, life, truth and love, He will advance us in our years to a higher understanding and change our hope into faith, and our faith into spiritual understanding, and our words into works, and our ultimate faith into the fruition of entering into the kingdom. Very big lady.
Beautiful. Thank you very much. All right, Karen, our watching point.
Watch number 28. Watch lest the apparent importance of handling and destroying error overshadow your realization that the way to overcome darkness is to let in the light, or that following the spiritual and scientific sense of man constitutes your real progress, so that you feel you must cover every claim of error every day in order to protect yourself properly. Such an attitude does not indicate the establishment and development of that trust in one's spiritual perception, in which one relies on inspiration to unfold what needs to be done each day. When an error has been seen as nothing, is it necessary for one to continue his effort in that direction? Unless, of course, the suggestion of its reality once again encroaches upon thought.
Thank you. All right, comments?
I think that this has been helpful for me. This thought that if I think I have anything to do with the healing, so-called, we're not really healing anything, but if I think I have anything to do with it, either in saying the right truths, or then I'll never know enough to know it's nothing. I have to know that God is the only, we say God, God, I and myself are one. God within me does the work. The Father within me does the work. So if I'm constantly trying to make an effort of making something of nothing, just leaving it to God and knowing that it is nothing, then really that's my only job, is to leave it to Him, unless I think I have to keep knowing that it's not true. We just know it's not true because God is all. And we have to rest in that, learn to just rest, that's all we need to do. God will do the work.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Yes, I think it's the constant realization and one's own experience of the Christ within that matters, that should take precedence over the handling of error. We know because He is all, as been said, error, any kind of error is really nothing, powerless, nothingness. And so our focus then from that should be on the experiencing the Christ presence, which is the light that will shine out every error, every darkness.
Thank you.
Yes, and I was always taught that when something comes to thought, it's there for you to translate and handle. So if it keeps coming back to you, then that means it's still a reality in your thought. And so you just have to handle it. But no, if it's not a reality to you anymore, if you're not afraid of it, then you know it's not real if you think it's ridiculous, because it is.
Thank you. In that article on age, you know, she says, don't worry. I think it's a bad article anyway, but don't worry about the physical. Just ask for more light and love. And that is it, the light shining, the truth. Focus on God, the truths, and the light will get rid of the darkness. And every day is different. So to get into some routine or go through a series of treatments each day like a parrot, I say that's not good. If you can do it with inspiration, then if the thoughts still mean something to you, well, that's good. But if they don't, then you seek new inspiration, get something else. Keep it fresh and new and alive. To never be, the work is not humdrum, dear ones. It is repeating and defeating, but don't let it be humdrum. Anyone else?
I just like that, humdrum.
Oh. Yeah.
Yes, God makes all things new, so it should feel new every day.
Yeah, keep it new. You know, in that, her name was Anita Mojarian, I think. She wrote the book Dying to Be Me, which I've mentioned before, where she passed on. She had a belief of the C word, and she came back because her father on the other side told her she had to come back and live her life courageously. And she did, and they found nothing wrong with her. And she's written many things and lectured to many people. But one thing she said, I remember reading, if someone said, well, what if you have some yada, yada, yada problem? And she said, well, go enjoy your life. What makes you happy? Do what makes you happy. Don't sit around and feel miserable and think about the problem. Get out and do something. As long as you can, do something that makes you happy. Focus on the enduring the good and the true, as Mrs. Eddy says. And I thought that was very good advice. Florence, did you want to say anything more?
No, I think that's why it says to thought off of the problem and focus it on God instead.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And then that let unselfishness, goodness, mercy, justice, love, the kingdom of heaven reign within us. And sin, disease, and death will diminish until they finally disappear.
Could I add something?
Sure.
Yesterday, I was in this storage space in my studio building where they have construction, and somebody locked me in. I couldn't get out. And first, I got into this sort of panic, and I thought about the thoughts I've been working with my practitioner about gratitude. And I thought, this is just so right for me to be out of here. So I called certain numbers. They didn't work. And then I put in a group distress line, and everybody's on the holiday. And I said, I'm locked in. Could somebody come? And luckily, God was with me, because somebody came. And he opened the door, and he said he was sorry, and it was just beautiful, you know, because it seemed like I was told I wouldn't have gotten out until tomorrow, and this construction site is such that people could go in and out of it who shouldn't be there, and so I was really grateful, but I just kept thinking about gratitude.
That's beautiful. Thank you, Sari.
Yeah, nothing's ever lost, including you.
including you. Yeah.
So the joy, the gratitude is more reflective of God than of evil, right? If you had just gone into a panic and, oh, like that, you would have been staying Yeah, so the Christ presence is
more the Christ presence attracted what you needed to get you out. Mm-hmm. It's a good lesson. Thank you. All right, Jeremy, you want to read the golden text?
John, for God sent not his son into the world to condemn the world, but that the world should, that the world through him might be saved.
Yes, and this lesson has a lot to do with salvation. And so we'll start with what Nancy sent to me this week.
Sure. In 2 Corinthians, in our lesson, behold, now is the accepted time. Behold, now is the day of salvation. And I looked it up in the Webster's dictionary. It says the act of saving, preservation from destruction, danger, or great calamity. And in theology, the redemption of man from the bondage of sin and liability to eternal death, and the conferring on him everlasting happiness. This is the great salvation. And a few excerpts from Edward Kimball's article, Our Salvation. Salvation comes through knowing that the only God there is will not forsake us at any time. We must anchor ourselves in this thought and acquaint ourselves with life, truth, and love. The only reality is God with us. Salvation comes to us through right mental activity, the activity of the mind of Christ. God's grace is sufficient for every need. We must know that good thoughts are power and evil beliefs are powerless when met with truth. It is our privilege to have all good now. Man is the understanding of God and is perfect. He has no capacity to receive or manifest error, sin, sickness, or death in any form. This is the operation of truth, and it is here at all times and in all ways.
That's beautiful. Thank you. And that's what Zari did.
That operation, yes, I thought that. Right
there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. At all times and in all ways. It's sufficient for every need. And the only reality is God with us. I love that. And Mrs. Eddy's definition of salvation in Size and Health, life, truth, and love understood and demonstrated as supreme over all, sin, sickness, and death destroyed. And this is our salvation here and now. I love too. It's now. Don't wait till tomorrow. Now, now. One of our calendar statements a little bit ago was, you know, something about let today, let every day be the best day of your life or something like that. Yes, enjoy it to the fullest. Think God's holy thoughts. And you will definitely stay out of this belief of everlasting punishment, which is, of course, not of God. One of the main things to understand is that we have a God of love who never punishes, never doesn't know, has nothing to do with punishment. And I know when I was in science for a while, I'd had a Presbyterian background, and I know I was afraid of God. I got it from my mother inadvertently. It's not like she taught me that God was a God of wrath, but you just hear about it, you know, you do something wrong and who knows what might happen. But sin punishes itself. It's never God. God never punishes. And if we're in everlasting punishment, it's because we are thinking things we shouldn't and maybe doing things we shouldn't. And we can wake up and there'll be an end to that experience. There's so many things that I didn't know were sinning that I just did, like fear of God, like fear that he was a judge up in the sky, or negativity, or just general fear thoughts, jealousy, all these little things that might come in. Those are sins.
Worry.
This is why we have our Bible and Science and Health, to keep us on the right track and show us where we might have gone off. get us back on that track. So, all right, Shardell, your submission.
So from Science and Health 11, 264, man's spiritual being, and I looked that up in on our website, and I came across McNeil Young's The Art of Being Glad, which I think is very important. Okay, mankind must loose itself from the fetters of finite sense. Someone has said that unhappiness is the hunger to get happiness, while happiness is the hunger to give. The wonderful thing about happiness is that it can grow in any soil, exist under any condition. This God-given joy is steadfast because it depends upon principle and not persons. It is only the joy of the Christ which makes our joy full. As thought is freed from self-love and self-will, we find happiness surpassing anything of which we have hitherto dreamed. One might possess everything material and tangible in the world and still not be happy. Happiness does not depend upon having, but upon being. The art of being glad consists in part in the ability to be happy at all times, even when there seems to be no occasion for rejoicing. If we love, joy is inevitable, and there can be no real joy unless one loves. And the more one loves, the greater and more expansive will be his happiness. Many a patient has been healed by simply learning to be glad, by learning to be grateful. It isn't reasonable to expect God to dwell with us unless we could offer him a dwelling place, so to speak, freed from ingratitude and unhappiness. The joy that accompanies spiritual understanding knows enough to give thanks for what I have not seen. That is why no one can take our joy away from us. So let us be happy now and forever.
Thank you. I love that. It isn't reasonable to expect God to dwell with us unless we can offer him a dwelling place, so to speak, freed from ingratitude and unhappiness. And that is why, and I can't emphasize it enough, joy and gratitude are two essential ingredients to any healing. How can you even hear God if you're mumbling and grumbling? He's all around you. He's speaking with you. He loves you. He's your consciousness if you let him in, but you block it with all this mumbling and grumbling. Florence, did you want to say anything?
No, I just want to comment on what has been said earlier, because, you know, I never thought that worry was sinful. But I see, it's clear. Worry is belief in a power apart from God, right? So it's just a very significant thing to remember. Whoever worries, people would say, well, I'm just being cautious, but this worry is you're not seeing God as all.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, that was a big revelation to me. And then I realized that if you're always believing in something, so if it wasn't in God, it was the so-called devil. A so-called devil that I thought had power. Otherwise, why was I worrying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was raised, the thought was always, oh, I'm just being realistic,
Yeah, right.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
I also meant to mention under salvation, this was something that Sylvia quoted, Sylvia from Australia, in her testimony, which was on Wednesday, which was a quote from Mrs. Eddy, April 8th, 1890. Our salvation is through love. Call God love always and bend all your efforts toward achieving perfect love in thought, word, and deed. This is the way. All is one through it. Its presence gives me all. Its absence takes all away from me. Therefore, love is the fulfilling of the law. Love is heaven, and hate is hell. Everlasting punishment, okay? Stay in love. When you start with this, whatever, not liking this one or that one, or in any way becoming unloving, you are experiencing something you don't need to. No, stay in the Father's house. Stay loving. And in the, you know, I love John Morgan's some notes on true vision. And in the one of, on Christianity, he says, Christianity involves proof, proof of the true and disproof of the untrue. Wherever I look, I am aware that divine love is in operation to heal and regenerate and save. Thus, I am never dismayed by what I see, for I am increasingly aware of the supremacy of truth. It's a very powerful statement in order to handle what we seem to see on the news or whatever else. I am aware that divine love is in operation to heal and regenerate and save. Thus, I am never dismayed by what I see, for I am increasingly aware of the supremacy of truth. And if we're not doing that, we're not seeing correctly, right? We're letting the physical senses overwhelm us and make us believe that there is some power other than God, as Florence was just talking about. And, you know, in word, deed, and truth, it was on the calendar this week, a testimony by Florence about word, deed, and truth, and how powerful that is. Word, deed, and truth. Is that right? Oh, word, deed. Mm-hmm. What is it? And I think I'm misquoting it. Well, anyway, in everything you do and say, make sure it is the truth. So, all right, and that's very important. I have it.
Mary,
yeah. Sorry, I'm thought, sorry. Thought, word, and deed. Thought, word, thought first, word, and deed. Okay, who is talking?
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. In Henry Drummond's Greatest Thing in the World, you just reminded me how he says, if you give your body to be burned for Christ and you have not love, don't bother. That's a paraphrase. You know, yes. And so that's, I have to remind myself of that so often. If you're doing somebody a favor or you're doing an errand for someone and then all of a sudden you run out of time or for whatever reason, you're grumbling in your head. You don't have to say anything outside of yourself, but your grumbling in your head is just as bad. And just to, I have to remind myself, if you're not doing this with divine love, then just forget about it. And then you just have to go back and remind yourself of how it is that you're doing it with divine love, because divine love is all.
Yes. And you see, it is expressing that love that keeps you out of everlasting punishment and in everlasting love. So you have to express that love. I think it was in an old article where someone was saying about divine love always has met and always will meet every human need. And so then the question was, well, how much divine love are you expressing? We're always looking to get from God, but we must be his expression, right? We have to. We are his reflection.
Yeah, the person was complaining that they couldn't get a healing. I just read it last night.
Oh, wow.
And,
thank you.
He was complaining and said, well, where's divine love? Why is, you know, meets every need, it says. And okay. McNeil Young says, well, where's your divine love?
Thank you. Perfect. Thank you very much. Yes. Yeah. We have, again, gratitude, joy, divine love, the expressions. These are the healing virtues we've talked about in the past that keep us one with our Father, at one with our Father. Did you want to say something, Craig?
Oh, no, I'm just enjoying and learning.
Thank you. Misha Ayla, did you want to say anything about what you sent about the river?
Yes. I
like the whole week, I liked this verse 4 in Psalm 46. There's a river, the streams thereof shall make glad the city of God, the holy place of the tabernacles of the Most High. And I was pondering this, and then I looked it up in Bible Hub, and there it was a nice comment from the treasury of David, and it's like follows. There is a river, divine grace, like a smoothly flowing, fertilizing, full and never failing river, yields refreshment and consolation to believers. This is the river of the water of life, of which the church above, as well as the church below, partakes evermore. And then there is also an explanation about what a river means for an eastern city in former time, like it was in time of siege. It was important to survive the siege. So this is somehow connected to this verse. And because if there's water, like it says, if that were secured, the water, the city could hold out against attacks for an indefinite period. In this verse, Jerusalem, which represents the Church of God, is described as well supplied with water to set forth the fact that in seasons of trial, all sufficient grace will be given to enable us to endure unto the end. And I thought about that in connection to myself and others. And I thought, when we are faced with a so-called problem or challenge, and that could be said is a siege to mortal mind, which wants to hold us captive, then the river of divine grace flows smoothly and lovingly around us, around me and others, nourishing and protecting and cleansing us. It is flushing away the wrong conceptions that something else than divine love surrounds us. And I had a chance this morning to apply that, because I came into a situation where someone was discouraged and I got discouraged as well. I thought about that river that surrounds us and flushes away all the wrong thoughts. And that was helpful.
Yes, that's very beautiful. You know, it's amazing. Commentaries, all that's written about the Bible, it's like everyone has researched and thought about it, and it's just incredible. So during the week, you know, especially if you have any question or want to dig deeper, do as Misha Ila did and look up. That's so beautiful about the river. Very beautiful. And Mrs. Eddy talks in the glossary about the various rivers, and they have deep meaning. So, yes, enjoy your week and enjoy your lesson and enjoy the study of it, not just the mere reading, but the study of it. Thank you for that, Misha.
Mary, I have a comment to what you said. Like, when in the beginning, when I knew Christian Science, I did not touch any Bible commentaries or so, because I thought, oh, this is not Christian Science. I cannot touch it. I cannot read it. It's not the truth. And since I came to Plainfield and hear other people commenting from commentaries, I thought, okay, I can do that. That's nice. And it's amazing, like amazing sometimes how much truth there is. Sometimes it's different than we think, but often there is amazing comments which can help me.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah, I used to think that too. And yet all these commentaries, I mean, this is the truth. The truth is the truth. And many of these were written either before or during Mrs. Eddy's time. And I think in those days they read these commentaries. They got deep in the study of the Bible. What did she study the Bible for 3 years and nothing else? So, yes. And you'll know if it goes off or if there's something not according to the science that we love. It won't sit right. But so much of it is definitely inspired.
And what a claim that is, because, you know, I know I've done that too, but we will read things that aren't Christian Science or Christian and not think that, you know. We won't read things in the world and be like, oh, this wasn't written for Christian Science, so I shouldn't
read. Yeah, that's right. Thank you. Yeah. So, again, dear Carrie from California sent me many articles. I'm just going to touch lightly on some of their points. One on the joy and satisfaction of today just brings out that when we serve God, we should be serving him in love. And that Jesus brought this new concept of God, as we talked about earlier, as being love. And for many people, it was a huge new concept. And even that thought alone brought healing. And then as we serve him, not because we're afraid of him or because it's a duty or something, you know, someone's telling you to do, but because you love him, because he loves you. And then there's such joy in his service. And then the humanity of Christ. Jesus' life demonstrated God's tender mercies, compassion, helpful sweetness, ever-present sympathy, pitying tenderness, and forgiveness. All of this is seen from his baptism to healing the brokenhearted and those in distress, to the healing of Mary Magdalene, his forgiveness of those who crucified him, his answer to Peter as how many times one must forgive was 70 times seven, his parables of the lost sheep, the lost piece of money, the Good Samaritan, and the prodigal son all preached mercy. I mean, my goodness, everything he did was love. And then the idea of expectation is from him. Ella Hoag's article, Holy Expectation. And I've talked about that a lot, too. That's meant so much to me. You know, something can happen. Oh, my gosh, this is awful. I'm going to die. Or, you know, you just think these awful things and don't catch yourself. I mean, really, where is your expectation? It has to be in God. You expect good from the situation. You demand the blessing. And Ella Hoag says, expectation has been defined as a conviction which excludes doubt. Mm. Now, while mankind is always entertaining such convictions, the difficulty is they are generally based on so positive a belief in evil that the expectations held are only of disaster, failure, and distress. So when we stop to realize that to expect anything but good is to deny God, we are awakened to see that health and holiness, harmony in heaven are the only expectations we have the right to entertain. Catch yourself, watch yourself, even in the news. Oh my gosh, what, you know, what's going on? This is going to be terrible. Nope, the supremacy of truth is in operation, no matter what we seem to see with our so-called eyeballs.
And to that point, there's a quote in Science and Health where it says, omnipotence has all power, and to acknowledge any other power is to dishonor God.
Thank you. That should be written on your forehead. Seriously, really. And then this was interesting about a rock, a sure foundation, because it talks about the world's tallest building at the time was the Woolworth Building, which I didn't know that. And it was from 1913 to 1930. It was the tallest building. It's supposed to be an incredibly beautiful building in New York City. And it said that the vastness of its towering sweep at once prompted wonderment how any foundation could have been devised which could prove equal to the support of such an enormous structure. Then it was told how they excavated into the earth until the mighty ledge upon whose shoulders even the Himalayas would prove but a feather's weight was uncovered. And that upon this there was built a great steel and concrete substructure, which is unburdened even by so enormous a load, because the planet itself is supporting it. Like, wow. And, you know, Gary was saying, well, that's partly why New York is what it is. It's built on a huge rock. And so all these buildings have this foundation, goes down into the earth itself. And they say it's as light as the Himalayas. It's something to think about, because what did Peter or Christ say? The recognition of him being the Christ and the healing work coming from God. Upon this rock, I shall build my church. And nothing shall tear that thought down. Nothing. It's so strong, a rock. We think of our Father, Mother, God as a rock. And then God's mercy. Many of you know The Merchant of Venice, and Ella Hoag wrote an article, God's Mercy, but it quotes, "The quality of mercy is not strained. It droppeth as the gentle rain from heaven upon the place beneath. It is twice blessed. It blesseth him that gives and him that takes." Mercy, very powerful. And that leads me to this article. It's been on our website, but Anne in England pointed it out to me. It's called Forgiveness. It's from an 1894 Christian Science Journal by Isabella Lamont. And it is really wonderful. I'm going to go through some of it. If I don't get through all of it, you all should study it. Now, 1894, Mrs. Eddy was here. She approved this. So she starts out, "It is only, quote, he that repenteth and forsaketh his sin that shall find mercy," end quote. That does not mean forsaking it for a day or any period of time and then resuming it again, but forsaking it finally. Okay, so that's, she starts with that. But now let us see what is meant by the term forgiveness. And honestly, forgiveness is something everyone seems to have a problem with. I mean, everyone I think I've ever spoken to, so including myself at times. Webster says, "Forgiveness, the pardon of an offender by which he is considered and treated as not guilty. Forgive, to pardon, to remit as an offense or debt, to overlook an offense and treat the offender as not guilty." The original and proper phrase is to forgive the offense, to send it away, to reject it, that is, not to impute it to the offender. But an easier transition, we also use the phrase to forgive the person offending. And then that word offend, I looked up, and because the Bible says, "Great peace have they that love thy law, and nothing shall offend them." Nothing shall make them angry, to feel hurt by rude behavior. Okay, and then back to the article. Webster says to punish is to afflict with pain, loss, or calamity. But we know that sin is its own punishment, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Sin will punish itself always. So we don't have to feel like we have to go out there and wave our arms around and get something punished. It'll take care of itself. And you can know that the error goes back on itself and destroys itself, because that's true. All error can do is destroy itself. And woe be to those that hang on to the error. They will seem to have a hard time till they let the error go. And that's not my opinion. That's biblical and scientific.
And we're also not causing suffering by knowing that.
Yes.
The system works.
Yes. As long as you think of it as an offense, it is not forgiven. The Bible thus speaks of God's method of forgiving sin. I am he that blotteth out thy transgressions for mine own sake and will not remember thy sins. And it goes on and on about totally forgetting sins. Then to forgive a transgression is to blot it out of your memory or your consciousness, to destroy it, to make it cease to exist. Have you done that? If you have not, then according to the statement, for if ye forgive not men their trespasses, neither will your Father forgive your trespasses. So what does that statement mean? Does it mean that God's attitude to you is determined by your attitude to your fellow man? That his conduct is to be regulated and guided by yours? If God is the same yesterday, today, and forever, he is always absolutely right. He is not thinking kindly of you today and angry with you tomorrow. But then, if ye forgive not men their trespasses, must mean if you have not eliminated from your consciousness the sense of evil sufficiently to see that your brother's real being cannot commit an offense, and your real being is not susceptible of receiving an offense. Then your conception of God is too limited and material to perceive that he is unchangeable love, and that every good and every perfect gift cometh from him, but nothing that is evil or imperfect. So this idea of forgiveness, it has to raise your consciousness to a deeper understanding of God. He never created anyone to offend you, nor are you capable of receiving the offense. That's very radical, and it's something I don't think I've ever read before, but I think it's true. I do.
Yeah.
And your sense of entire forgiveness or of absolution will be attained only when your own consciousness is so purified that evil of any sort will find no response, no lodgment or abiding place therein. When the prince of this world shall come and find nothing in you. Mm-hmm. And then this poem, which there's some debate over who wrote it, but I hold it true that thoughts are things endowed with bodies, breath, and wings, and that we send them forth to all the world with good results, to fill the world with good results or ill. That which we call our secret thought speeds to the earth's remotest spot and leaves its blessings or its woes like tracks behind it as it goes. You know, I used to think, oh, I'm just having a little secret thought. No one will be hurt by it. No, not true. Watch it. That's what it's saying. It's going to go to the remotest spot and leave its blessings or its ills. Be careful. Now that's the end of the poem. Be careful of your thoughts. They will lead you. Be careful of your words. If you destroy the thought before it has been expressed in words, it will be more easily done. And then it talks about the woman, a Catholic woman who goes to a priest confessing that she's gossiped, and he told her that she must inflict a penance to teach her the evil of it. So he gave her a ripe thistle, which he told her to scatter by the wayside and then report to him. And she thought, oh, wow, that's pretty easy. So she went and did that, and thinking that was an easy penance. Some of you know this story, but when she returned the next day and told him that she had done it, he told her to go gather up all the seeds that she had scattered, and the impossibility of that task showed her the irreparable wrong of retailing error. So you think, you know, a little thing is a little thing, but it can scatter far and wide. Just, you know, just remember that. Of course, then we go back to no, it has no power. Only God, good, has power. But why go through all that, right? Let's just be kind. Okay, then good will become more real to you as error becomes unreal. Mm-hmm. But you say, that seems like such a simple thing to do that we cannot believe there is any power in that to rid us of evil. Nahum thought what he was required of him was a very simple thing, and because of its simplicity, he did not want to comply with the command of the prophet. And his servants, understanding the pride which stood in the way, said, and then you know that story, he had to do the simple thing and lose his pride. So good will become more real to you as error becomes more unreal. That is a simple thing you have to do. And watch its effect. Let good become real. Think of the good, the enduring, and the true. Watch what it will do to you. And don't think it's some fancy thing you have to do. Nahum wished to do some great thing, but he found it hard to do a little thing. But the pride must give place to humility, to childlike obedience and trustfulness, before that sense of uncleanness would leave his consciousness. It was the mental condition which the prophet sought to change, knowing that would externalize speedily in healing. It was getting rid of this pride and all of that that followed. That is what the prophet was getting at, right?
Yeah.
And when Naaman did it, he was healed. So remember, these things in science and health, in the Bible, the commandments, the Sermon on the Mount, we are to obey these things lovingly today, Mrs. Eddy says. And you will see the effect in your life, in your health, in all everything. And certainly this concept of forgiveness is a big one. Don't come to the altar. What does the Bible say? Don't come to your altar if you have an unforgiving heart.
If your brother has aught against you.
Yeah.
And I was looking at Romans 12 where he says, you know, we are not to avenge ourselves. Vengeance is mine, I will repay. So it's not ours to do. We've got to forgive.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. It's not ours to do. We have to forgive. And it is beautifully portrayed in The Chosen with, Simon Peter. He couldn't not forgive Matthew. But think of the healing that happened when it was done.
Something happened to me. Somebody did something and I was so mad. And so I made vengeance is mine, my password, so I won't forget.
Thank you. Thank you. I know, and often it is terribly unjust. I mean, these things are unjust, but that's when you're persecuted for righteousness' sake. You've done nothing wrong, and you're still being treated badly. Mm-hmm. And that is when you've got to really get into the truth of it and the science of it, and only that will get you out of it. I remember, too, being so mad about something. Phew. I thought I'd never get over it. And I read every day, I read Love Your Enemies and Taking Offense, two powerful articles and miscellaneous writings by Mrs. Eddy, until it finally left me. So don't let that grow in you, unforgiveness. And I know, I can hear it, oh, well, you know, this person, this happened, this thing happened, it was so unjust. Well, Learn the lesson. And if you do, and if you remain true to your God, great blessings, perhaps the greatest of all, will happen. As we see in the Bible with the prophets, Joseph, all these people, Daniel, treated so badly, unjustly. They stayed with God, Christ Jesus, Mrs. Eddy, and great things happened. And sin will just punish itself. Those who committed the crime, unless they repent and change, they will suffer for it, and you don't have to lift a finger.
I was thinking about what you just said, Mary, with that, you know, things will come and you're like, well, what on earth, you know, what did I do to deserve this? You know, especially when it's things that might make us feel offended. But then I think back to, you know, Jesus saying the prince of this world cometh and findeth nothing in me. He didn't say the prince of this world won't come. It does try to come, but the question is, does it find anything with you? And yeah. I've thought about that a lot with like the things like Tony talked about on Wednesday with our neighbor. I mean, every so often it's like we think things are fine and then something bubbles up and I know when he was praying about it, I wanted to get angry about it too. But I was like, no, you know, it's like that you have to kind of smooth off those edges that error wants to latch onto. And I don't want to come let it hang its coat on me.
Exactly. It's hunting for you. And that's what they say malpractice is. If it can't find anything in you, it can't operate. But if you get hateful and angry or jealous or whatever, it'll try to get its claws in you. So otherwise, it's harmless. It's nothing. It's a belief in a power apart from God again. So are you going to stand in awe of it and give it the power it does not have? Or are you going to see it for what it is and move on? But a main point in all of this is you don't ignore these things. They have to be handled. You don't shove it under the rug or pretend it doesn't exist or everything is great. No, you face how you're feeling, wrestle with the error, and get dominion over it. Become the victor. Always the victor, never the vanquished. That's dealing with it. The other is not. And it'll pop up later in a worse form. It always must be handled.
Yeah, thank you. Two quotes that have blessed me so much is you just said stand, and he's the one in science and health. Why you stand, Agas, does nothing.
Yes.
And that is a powerful one. And the other blessing so much was to understand that the Bible says that God is too good to behold evil. So what about forgiving? God doesn't even have anything to forgive because doesn't even see evil. So it's only the human sense of that. That's yes. What came to me and has been a blessing.
Yes. All right. Well, it's time to end. So we will end with something from William McCracken.
This is from an article in 1919. Sentinel, I guess, The Way That Is Best by William McKenzie.
Oh, sorry, McKenzie.
He writes, for a man to reach his best requires no comparison of himself with others, but only his own decision within to wait on God, to silence human ambition, to cease from vainglory, to obey love. Truly, the all-loving, all-knowing, all-acting divine mind must know best, love best of all, act for the best. The obedient one, then, is not left to laborious self-maintenance or to struggle with other contestants for supremacy. Out of all contests and strifes of tongues, he is lifted. Disquieting rumors no more invade his peace. He shall not be afraid of evil tidings. He simply is not moved, since he knows goodness and greatness as one, and is obedient to both precept and example of the Master, of whom it was said that he went about doing good and healing all that were oppressed of the devil. For God was with him. Thus it is that intuition comes whereby Mrs. Eddy's words in her message to the Mother Church for 1900 can be fully understood. In that message, she declares, quote, all that worketh good is some manifestation of God, asserting and developing good. Evil is illusion. That after a fight vanishes with the new birth of the greatest and best, end quote.
Thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.